is free. Visit groundworksomerville.org for more information. And speaking of the bike path extension, point being, the proposed community path extension through Somerville to Boston and beyond. There's going to be a walking tour of the path extension to be led by the Friends of the Community Path this Saturday morning, starting at 9:30 or 10:15, as you wish. At 9:30, meet at the Cedar Street end of the present Community Path in Somerville, and tour around Cedar to Lowell Street, or you can meet up with the group at 10:15 at the Lowell Street Bridge to begin the rest of the tour. The group will walk about 2 miles, following along the future Green Line extension route, and the tour ends around 12:30 p.m., but there are buses along the way if you'd like to leave sooner. The tour is free. Donations to the Friends of the Community Path are, of course, welcome. This is sponsored by the Friends of the Community Path, and you can visit their website for more information. It's pathfriends.org. Jamaica Plain Open Studios is this weekend, I believe. Among the many interesting exhibits, Red Sun Press is hosting a political art show called Critical Views 5, A New Generation. This show highlights emerging artists illustrating contemporary struggles for social justice, the environment, and economic and political change. It's this Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. And Red Sun Press is located at 94 Green Street in Jamaica Plain. For more information about JP Open Studios, visit jpopenstudios.com. Uh-oh. Didn't really say that. Time Out, The Good Kind, an exhibit of photography by Lolita Parker Jr. will be on display at the Haley House Bakery Cafe starting on October the 1st, which is next Friday. An artist's reception will be held next Saturday, October 2nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. This retrospective exhibit begins with Parker's early work from the mid-70s continuing to the present. Throughout her career, certain themes pervade: masculinity, femininity, race consciousness, social justice, and the struggles and joys of daily life. Goodness, this is quiet. Located at 12 Dade Street in Dudley Square, Roxbury, Haley House Bakery Cafe is a nonprofit community cafe which serves affordable, natural, agriculturally sustainable, healthy meals. Haley House also runs a soup kitchen in the South End, maintains over 100 units of low-income housing, operates an organic farm, and much, much more. Visit haleyhouse.org for more information. I will have to make something happen now. Stay tuned. I think we're out of time. It's about 7-ish, and you're listening to WMBR in Cambridge, where the views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Yes. Human beings are coming, and they will make music for human beings. Stay tuned for that coming up next. We will rejoin you next week for more of What's Left. Thank you for joining us this week. Stay tuned to WMBR in Cambridge.
Such as mine finds no better company. You are listening to Music for Human, and I am Victor Jalis Sakran, welcoming you. We are joined on this sordid evening by Erno. Erno, welcome.
Thank you for having me again. I must say that I can only offer you the most potent of potions, my gratitude.
my thirst of loneliness is beginning to be quenched. We are also joined this evening by Zoro. Zoro, welcome.
Welcome back.
And I also welcome you.
Let us transcend this sordid night. Let it be not sordid longer.
Let it also be longer.
Yes.
I must say, gentlemen, it's been a strange week for me in the potion business, if you will. Had conversations with a few of my fellow workers. One of them on a very, very interesting topic. Animal communication. My friend seems to believe that it's possible or to communicate with her horse.
I've heard of this. Yeah, yes. Yes. You concentrate and send your thoughts instead of without focus. You send them directly at an object or an animal and
yes, I believe
transmit.
This is the, for now, our topic of conversation. Can we communicate with animals? How does it work? How much can we get across?
Well, gentlemen, I think let me ask a more simple question. Have you ever, in a moment of meditation, found yourself in the spirit of an animal? In its body, feeling its limbs, feeling yourself move through it?
I believe yes, and in fact I believe in a moment of some meditation I have found that an animal has found itself in the spirit of me. I was not in an alien body. But,
was it a mammal?
It was a platypus. Is it a mammal?
Well, that's very strange. I think it shows some undecided nature about you, Zoro.
Well, I've always been somewhat hesitant.
Are you a mammal? Are you a bird?
I believe that at heart I am just a being, genetically a human being, but pure being need not have a labeled genus.
I think this is very profound, the idea that simply it is sufficient to be labeled as a living thing, that truly life is simply being alive. Well, if you would like to be alive with us, the number is 617-253-8810, and we would love to hear from you and to be guided by you. Marhaban, caller?
Yeah, hi, this is Scott from Cambridge. Were you on the air this week?
Scott, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
We are doing well, and it is so wonderful to hear your voice again.
Thank you. What was the actual? I'm missing a tooth, so it's different speaking. What was the actual topic that you had this week?
Well, Scott, we were just now discussing whether or not it was possible to communicate with animals, and whether or not the communication would be received.
Cool.
Do you have any experience?
With animals?
With animals, trying to communicate with them, pets, for instance.
Or perhaps them trying to communicate with you.
Phonetically?
Well, not necessarily phonetically, I mean,
I believe that's my question.
So much of our communication is not through the oral means.
Yes, just now you looked at me and it was quite apparent what you meant.
An arresting look or gesture, but also simply a spiritual presence which is rarely felt but can be very intense when it is felt. The spirit of a person suffering.
Picasso's Minotaur. Picasso had a thing for Minotaurs.
The Minotaur, the demon of the maze.
Well, no, it's Picasso himself. So it would be along those lines, I think. And Susie, my dog.
Yes, Susie. What?
My Springer Spaniel. They're like Cocker Spaniels, but more sublime and serene. They're like.
I find the best pets are quite sublime.
And how long have you had Susie?
Oh no! This was back when I, you know, Fort Building and long ago. I'm sorry, I'm a little exhausted. I just finished lifting weights. I didn't know if you were going to be here this week.
No, Scott. Please, there is certainly no pressure, and I think when I feel myself also am tired or weary, that nothing really is better than being together with my friends here.
Do you have a pet or mascot?
I do not at the moment, but I have had several. I found that I suffer from a lot of allergies. So I've had felines and also canines.
Sea creatures.
Avines. Unfortunately, I'm really unable to commune with sea creatures because I regard them as being members of the plant family in a real way. So, not to say that I do not realize that they move and that they are more sophisticated structures, but I cannot.
No, I do not believe that as an insult in any regard. Plants are quite majestic. But
how do you relate to something that doesn't have legs, Oro? I don't understand. I agree with the doctor here.
I think that relating with the being might perhaps be the opposite sometimes to appreciating it.
Well, in any case, I have no training on the nurture of my pets, but I simply can identify with them. I relate with them, and I realize, Susie is hungry. She is behaving as though she must have something to drink.
No, I took her out of Pavlov.
But simply as an example.
Yeah, no, I took her out of Pavlov. She was a good dog. She's very, very, very like a nun.
So you would.
No, I excused her from Pavlov at times. But you're right.
But
once they get to know you on an emotional basis.
I cannot relate to a fish, to the piscine. I find it unrelatable. Inevitably, they would perish.
I have trouble with birds as well, other than ducks. I can relate well to ducks.
It is difficult, I think, this issue of the time scales. If an animal has a very short lifetime in comparison to your own, it can be hard to appreciate the struggles and their significance for one another.
Ironically, I have inadvertently nurtured whole brigades of fruit flies, and I do not regard them as pets. in spite of the fact that I share my food and my living space with them.
Ah, but do the fruit flies, do they regard you as a master?
I wonder, I would suggest even the cats that I've owned have regarded me as subordinate to them.
Perhaps especially the cat.
In the end, maybe we are all only the beta fruit flies. None of us are the alphas.
And it draws to mind an interesting comparison to make us the fruit flies of Mother Earth, to watch humanity, yes.
I wonder if anyone has related, because I find it difficult to relate to plants, and they often die in my care. So I wonder if relatability is essential to nurture.
They come back to sunlight or photosynthesis, though.
They do, and I think, since I do not process solar energy in the same way, I find it difficult to identify. I do not look at a person and say, this person requires sunlight to survive,
to
nurture.
Which is my question about eternity. Or eternity and, I don't want to use the word cosmos. A new age view of pets that encompasses the nurturing and the womb,
yes.
And things of those.
The psychological ties which one makes, which the pets make with one. In fact, it's necessary, I think, to live well. To live well, it's necessary to view these things and to understand them.
But Scott, I wonder why you avoid the word cosmos, because to me, cosmos embodies the idea of beauty in the universe.
Oh no, I like universe and galaxy. I like the words universe and galaxy.
But I mean, you appreciate my point about the word cosmos.
I vaguely.
Well, like cosmetics, it's the ultimate in beauty. These related words.
If you so choose them to be.
And to me, that is really the definition of the universe, the unbounded world, which is defined by its own beauty.
Is that your unique relationship to it? Yeah, sure.
But Scott, going back to what you were saying before about Susie.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about the relationship you had with her? This is in your extreme youth?
Yeah. She was a Springer Spaniel, a couple rabbits. A couple rabbits.
You had her
Not really any horseback riding. Not really any equestrian things.
The equine.
Equestrian. Yeah.
You were not a horse rider.
The one sneaking off into a secluded area for the pony.
Mm-mm. And Scott, which of your teeth did you lose?
The large dipping
The molar
one in the front, yeah.
I'm very, very sorry.
The incisor, Scott?
Like Robin Gibb?
No.
The one in the front.
the front tube.
It makes a whistle sound, so that you have to when that you have to move gently. It does funny things.
Ah, yes.
It makes a whistling sound that if you. Mm-hmm. I'm not known to caterwaul or shriek.
It's not your nature. Well. To our other listeners who are just joining us, this is Music for Humans. If you'd like to call and to join in our discussion, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller 2, marhaban.
Hello.
Caller 2?
Yes.
I'm sorry, caller 2?
Yes, this is caller 2.
Welcome, sorry, the vibrations were not fully engaged.
In phase, yes.
Yes, can you hear me now? This is Professor Levine.
Welcome, Professor.
How are you?
Well, we are well.
We are so
very well,
now
Professor.
You have joined us.
Yes, I've been listening. Can you hear me well?
We spectacularly well, Professor.
Oh, excellent. I can hear you as well, too. And you know that even without this listening device, this telephone, I can feel the vibrations traveling from the studio in Cambridge to where I am down in South America at the moment.
Yes,
in
indeed.
Chile.
It's as clear as the celestial bell, if you will.
Yes, as clear as the setting afternoon sun, I believe.
And tell us about your journeys there, Professor. We were just discussing animal companionship. And I know that Chileans are famous for their companion monkeys, which are lifelong companions.
Well, contrary to that stereotype, I have instead been enjoying the company of a very lovely sheep. And I met him several weeks ago, and we became immediately good friends. And I do believe that the soul of all living creatures transcends species-specific boundaries.
I think that's a very beautiful image too, Professor. And is it the kind of relationship where, you know, Scott is here with us as well, and he was telling us that he selected his dog out of a pool that were being trained in Pavlovian mechanics. And I wonder, is it really possible to select a companion, or is there a mutual selection that takes place even under such circumstances?
I believe it would have to be two ways. Do you agree, Professor?
Well, I think one navigates the many streams of life. One travels through these many journeys, and one comes across many other creatures during these journeys. And sometimes a spark occurs, a certain connection occurs, whether it is with a human being or a horse or even a mouse. And I found sometimes the mice that are nibbling in my apartment, nibbling at the food scraps, I sometimes feel some deep connection with these creatures, because I know that in my life as well, I often nibble at the scraps that others have left for me.
Indeed, the potion of companionship, one of the most potent.
And one of the most spectacular aspects of traveling through the world is that one needs to find companionship, because one is undertaking a solitary journey. So the motivation is there, and one just goes out and is willing to just make friends wherever they may be. And one trick that I found in my own travels for making fast friends among strangers is to walk around with half of a smile upon your face. Not a complete smile, because then you look.
If I might interrupt, is it the left half or the right?
Or possibly the bottom.
It's more it's the lower half. So it's a sort of the edges of the lips curl upward a little bit. But if one were to walk with a complete smile, people would think that you were a village idiot. So of course you walk with a half smile. And the great thing about a half smile is that no matter what amusing encounter you have, you may see a beautiful tree, a lovely woman, or a cute field mouse, that little smile can easily form into a large grin. And once others see that large grin, they grin back at you, and you can form those bonds of friendship immediately.
I think this is beautiful. Also, it seems to me that the advantage of the half smile is that immediately, if one realizes that a full smile is inappropriate, one may retreat the half smile into a neutral or even negative countenance.
I believe I must try this technique. I will put it to use for sure.
Yes, and I think one exercise that really anyone can undertake is to attempt to smile at least one stranger each day, to really achieve that eye-to-eye contact, the smile. And I think all the listeners will experience the fact that the smile will almost certainly be returned, and both you and the other person will end up with a happier day as a result.
It is considered in my culture an act of charity to smile at a friend. I wonder, Professor Levine, this half smile, was it something that you developed using the Alexander technique?
Well, I actually have forgotten the Alexander technique. It's been many years since I was trained in it. Perhaps you can remind me.
The Alexander technique is a method of producing an intended countenance and thereby an intended reaction through repetition and practice, using modern recording devices such as a plain mirror or a camera.
So this is a method for achieving the correct facial expression for
precisely
a particular emotion.
Precisely, and in truly advanced cases where it is especially difficult for one reason or another to produce the desired image, one may even use devices that will measure blood activity or the contraction of muscles.
And I have heard that for particularly sour individuals, often a prosthetic device can be required to produce the appropriate smile. Some surgical implants can be inserted into the jaw, which will make the smile a more natural muscular motion.
Have you seen this happen to someone you know?
Well, I have actually advised some of my disciples over the years to have this device implanted, and it's easily removed. It's akin to the IUD that a woman might have inserted for birth control purposes. So it can be inserted and deinserted, and I think you can go for about a year with a particular insertion, and just it makes that smile just pop out a little more easily. It just immediately pops out, and it's sort of, there's a spring involved, right? So that as soon as you make that upwards motion with your mouth, immediately your mouth forms into the full smile without any more effort.
Indeed, and it is well known that the muscles that are in the face, it is a thing that must also be trained. Amazingly, there is some built-in circuitry that a person who, when you smile, even if the smile is insincere, it will produce a positive reaction mentally, at least somewhat.
Yes.
And so simply exercising these muscles to make the smile more ready and available can improve one's view on life in general. And Scott, are you still with us?
Yes.
So Scott...
Hello, Professor. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
Good, thank you.
So my fear for you, Scott, at the moment is that... I'm not sure. I mean, but again, we are discussing these cosmetic things and the cosmos. I wonder if...
You would lead back to whether animals communicate with us with a smile.
Indeed, but having just lost a tooth, does this cause you to smile less out of discomfort or even fear or perhaps worry about the impression that you would leave with a...
He just said scars that never felt a wound.
But quite earnestly, I mean, I think it is very important that you consciously make an effort to smile in spite of the visual issue. You know, I think it's important not to be self-conscious.
In a way, I'm a person that would rather only tight-lipped and only use my eyes to acknowledge a lot of things. If I really wanted to say hi, I would stare and until it brought the other person to smile. And however long that might take.
That often will be more of a uncomfortable smile, though, I think.
No. Just knowing that I was going to stare until the smile was brought about, and then I would smile a second. But
see, there again, Scott, you are communicating with so much more than words. You are communicating with a spiritual emanation, and with your eyes, as you say, probably with gestures. Do you also gesture at the person when you are waiting for the smile, or are you still impatient?
No, I would probably actually. Good question. No, I would probably actually wait for
the
younger person to actually try to usurp that.
Yes, there are some cultures in which only the younger person of the pair may smile at the older person, and the older person would never initiate the smiling exchange because it would be considered disrespectful.
Now, it has come to my attention, you said you are in Chile, Professor.
Yes, Professor. Can you describe your work? What brings you there? Being new to music for human beings, I don't quite fully understand your work. I would be happy to hear more about it.
Well, as many of you may know, I recently passed from this world, and I experienced a few weeks where I was not present in my earthly form. I was comatose, actually, and my soul had ascended into a different realm, a different way of being, where I could commune with pure spirit itself. And I found this to be very wondrous, but I did get a little bored eventually, because I think physical pleasure is something that I am just not quite ready to give up yet.
So I thought it was a bit of
an experiment for myself, but I am not ready to leave this world, so I came back down into my body, awakened from my coma, and I decided to travel as far south as I could within the Western Hemisphere.
And your ascension and then pre-incarnation, so to speak, not literal, but in a sense a reincarnation, was the moment at which you achieved a higher degree and were dubbed.
How much of your time on the higher plane do you remember?
Well, I don't remember particular events, but I remember the way of being, because once one achieves a higher realm, time itself ceases to flow in the same way. One is removed from time, and one has a simple essence of being and experience.
Yes, I assume it must be very hard to describe that to those of us who have never left this plane.
It is precisely the definition of what is indescribable.
No, the Vikings. Go on.
So it so happens that Chile is the last known address of my friend, the poet Metamoros. I wonder if you are familiar with his work, Professor Levine. We spoke of this communication topic, and he was a master of communication, famed as a maker of love. And you may read his poems, of course. I'm sure you have to explore this subject. Have you known of him?
Yes, of course. And in fact, I was visiting him just the other day. He is living in seclusion now, and I believe living in one of the pine forests. And if you may, I would love to recite one of his poems for you and the listeners.
Please.
We would love to hear his poem.
Please.
And what I really love about his poetry is the fact that it's so concise in its expression. He can really just use a single few words and sounds to convey a whole universe of meanings and emotions.
Well, let us let the poetry speak for itself,
yes.
Shall we?
So this poem is called... And the poem goes like this. Did you hear that?
That was stunning.
That was the entire poem there, Professor Levine.
Yes.
See, now that to me is the outline of a door which could be filled in, could become the gateway to the soul. But I think that there is still a lot left to be filled in. Do you think this was an intentional design by the poet?
Yes, he wants us to walk through that door. That's what I believe.
I'm quite aware of this sense of omission to this particular piece.
It's evidentiary ellipsis.
Yes, my own personal reaction to this poem, and of course this is a personal and subjective interpretation, is that it conveys the pneumatic tube, the sending of the message in the mail through the pneumatic tube underground,
the pressurized
from the sender to the recipient.
Force behind the tube. But before we discuss and dissect the poem further, I wonder if each of us, and perhaps the listeners as well, could take a moment and close their eyes and try to write down any thoughts that they have had having to do with the poem. So if all of us could just take a moment now for 10 seconds, please. That 10 seconds?
I must say, during that time, what came to mind is the state of being right before you fall asleep. I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. It's the moment where you're lying in bed and you're either, you have your eyes closed or you're staring at your ceiling and you're thinking thoughts, and you could feel yourself falling asleep. And at that point, you have thoughts that may not make sense at any other time of the day. You may not even remember them when you wake up.
Yes,
but there's a term for this.
I know this well.
A liminal state.
It's very much the same for me, except that I sleep in a hammock.
And to me, in that dim light, everyone around me, all things in that state that you speak, all things are beautiful there. I think that also may be why I associate so much beauty with the vision of the living, the sleeping but living person. So any time that I come across a person who is sleeping, I find that an image of great purity.
Yes, it really makes you think how perhaps maybe the human person is more alive in that state than in any other state. It's just that we are so alive we can't remember.
I certainly think it is true that when a man or a being is asleep, they are much closer to the central consciousness of reality.
Yes.
Is there a central consciousness? This is an interesting thing, because if really there is, then animal communication would not only be possible, but it would be inevitable.
Yes, they would be communicating with us right now.
Through the central consciousness.
Yes, yes.
So I do wonder.
Perhaps we should attempt to channel this communication and experiment, maybe?
Well, if others would like to channel with us electronically, it is possible through 617-253-8810. But in the meantime, let us try to channel. Caller 3, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hi, I called last week and my wife was meditating and you guys told me to get some cornflakes.
Oh, yes. How did that situation turn out?
Oh, it turned out awesome. I mean, every morning I've been getting up, having my cornflakes.
I was actually worried on your behalf, because when I got home that night, I was wondering to myself, perhaps cornflakes were wrong. Maybe Rice Krispies instead.
Oh, all right.
Well, I mean, but the sun...
If it's working for you, then...
I mean, to me, the actual food is not essential. The essential portion is simply the idea of consuming the energy of the sun.
But there is an appropriateness of form to the situation.
Yeah, I can see that.
What is the appropriate form?
I think that cornflakes was the right choice, and if our caller agrees, then it is sufficient.
It's really his decision.
And
yes.
Caller, tell us about how you are feeling.
I feel fine. I feel like I have a lot more energy, and I'm a lot more free. If I might chime in, I think this is really a matter of finding the right food source for the individual person and the state that they are in at the present time. And I think sometimes cornflakes may be the right way of channeling the sun's energy. And for others, perhaps a T-bone steak might be more appropriate.
Yes,
I know you are quite fond of those, Professor.
You are indeed describing the essence of what it is I do, potionology, determining what compounds, what mixtures are best for one person at one time to help them achieve a desired state of mind or physical being. There's so many parameters, so many things you can change. It's a very tough discipline, and it is what you are describing, and indeed what our caller is going through right now.
And our cornflakes caller, how is it exactly that you are consuming the flakes?
I've been just out of a normal cereal bowl, just eating normally.
And now, this may be a controversial subject, but do you consume the cornflakes with milk?
No. I think it's a little better without it.
So it's really an unconventional consumption here. Because I think that the conventional method is with some milk, although I've seen unorthodox preparations with orange juice and water.
Indeed, a grandmother of mine ate her cereal that way.
Hmm.
It was very strange to me, but for her it worked.
And as a potionologist, I think that the appropriateness can be manifest.
Yes, and it really, there's such a personal aspect to it. Every situation is different. It's what makes my work feel new and original every day when I work and I have clients, or if I'm just in the lab doing research on potions.
So I also think that one of the most important ways of getting that energy from the sun, that spiritual energy, is not just the matter of what you consume, but the state of mind you have while you're consuming it.
Because of course,
it is not the actions themselves throughout life. It is not the actions themselves which are the only thing, but rather the person's intent when undertaking those actions, and a conscious intent to connect to the holy realms of the universe can be a very powerful method.
This is a very important aspect, a very, very important duality to our natures. To have an action and to have a deliberate purpose with such an action.
Yes, indeed, many forms of spiritual thought throughout human history have involved using food in certain ways or combining it with ritual. It's been with us since the beginning, Professor.
And to sort of give an example from the Jewish tradition, the Hasidic movement took this body of commandments that Jews were supposed to fulfill, these rituals that one was supposed to pray certain times of day and wave certain types of plants and so on. And they said that for every ritual, one should first say and feel, I am undertaking this ritual to unify the name of God and for the sake of the holiness of heaven. And while one may not believe in the name of God or the holiness of heaven, one can still take everyday aspects of one's life, everyday rituals, and even waking up in the morning, driving to work, and infuse them with meaning and spirituality through thought.
That's quite beautiful.
It is. It truly is a very, very meaningful image, because when one simply behaves, one acts without reflection, without depth, there can be only a limited amount of meaning to one's life. But call it what you like, perhaps channeling the earth resonant frequency. Or
and I think we all have that meaning within us also, and it's a matter of tapping into it within our soul and finding where it is and unleashing it.
Precisely, precisely. Well, if any of our listeners would like to unleash that earth resonant frequency, the number to do so is 617-253-8810.
You know, I think this resonant frequency touches back again with the central consciousness of the universe.
The central consciousness, because the...
Well, isn't that the fundamental way with which one would access that consciousness to resonate with the world?
Let's take a moment and try to access that consciousness now. Caller, welcome to the air.
Hey.
Welcome, caller 4.
Is Aurora there?
Unfortunately, no. Aurora is meditating.
Do you have any... Have you picked up any of her skills? I was wondering if you could give me a pregnancy test.
A pregnancy
test?
With
my voice.
Well, I would have to, as someone who is not trained, but spiritually connecting with you, I think that you are probably not pregnant.
Well, no, but what about someone that I know, romantically?
So
I'd assume we need their voice, but then again, it's not my field.
Well, I think we can...
Well, if I'm connected with her, and you're connected with me...
Precisely, there's a transitivity there, but the transmission is necessarily weaker, caller, and none of us are trained.
Well, caller, I am...
Well, what about... Can you do a meditative abortion, spiritually?
Well, so...
Just in case?
Well, I
can give you her number... If you just think about that, or like send you a Facebook photo.
Well, I actually am picking up a bit of a signal. I think someone you know, or perhaps someone who knows someone you know, is pregnant. And I can't tell you who it is, because I don't know who it is, but I am picking up some pregnancy vibration in your voice.
Perturbation in the central consciousness.
Caller.
Yes.
Caller, I'm a little bit confused because you are asking us to... There is a heartbeat there. You are asking us to end a life.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like a real baby life. It's just like probably a little tadpole right now, you know? Just kind of curled up, looking like a weird alien lizard. So it's cool. I mean, if you step on a lizard... If you eat a cat at a Vietnamese restaurant, and you could certainly just do this.
Well, I believe it is quite possible to offend cats with this behavior, and
tadpoles as well. I mean, just because they have yet to grow their legs doesn't mean they don't swim.
So, Calder, are you saying, Calder, that it is a justifiable homicide?
What? Cat abortions or... Man abortions, because I think both are pretty good.
The spiritual distant induced abortion.
Yeah, well, no, people do it all the time. I mean, I read a book about in Haiti. That's like basically what everyone does is just pay each other to give themselves like abortions with like hair dolls and stuff. So that's a big enterprise over there, and I figure someone's got to know someone, you know.
We'll
call it.
A lot of those people left and came over here, and I'm sure they're just doing the same stuff.
Well, unfortunately, I at least know none of them.
And caller, I think that there is some danger in this sort of process, and I would encourage your friend to try talking to a medical professional as a more appropriate avenue.
This is also a more accurate way of diagnosing the pregnancy.
Precisely. Let's bring a final caller on the air. Caller 7, marhaban. Caller?
Yes.
Welcome, caller.
Hello. I am very distressed. I'm afraid that I'm in need of ministrations that could help me with my stress. I burnt my kale. I was
doing some yoga earlier, and I lost track of time in the course of being in thought. And I don't know what to do, and I feel that I'm utterly desperate.
Now, are your chakras still aligned?
I'm sorry?
Caller, tell us again, you did what?
My kale. I had this entire beautiful collection of kale. It was going to be my food for the entire weekend, and I just cut it out of the garden, but unfortunately I was...
And you say you accidentally the whole thing?
The entire thing. All I have left now to subsist on for the entirety of the remaining week.
Might it be possible that while you were meditating, you entered a trance-like state and ate the kale?
This is possible, but the burnt smell in the air could either be the incense, but it is so much like kale, it makes me think that perhaps I would have accidentally bought kale-flavored incense, which I could have done when in another state, but have no memory of.
Now, caller, it may actually be a fortunate thing that this happened, because I would warn you against consuming simply kale by itself, because it is not a nutritionally sufficient organism for you. You will find yourself waste and perhaps develop scurvy or other nutritional ailments due to the consumption only of a single leafy vegetable.
Oh dear, but I was under the distinct impression from a master I met in Big Sur that kale could sustain not only the body, but indeed the very essences of our soul and the chemicals that make the synapses across which the spark of inspiration must ignite.
What sustains the soul is not necessarily what sustains the body. And indeed, maybe this situation is just the universe telling you kale was not what you were meant to eat this weekend. Maybe instead it was Swiss chard.
Or at a simpler level, perhaps when your mind was away, consumed by meditation, your body delivered to you a message. Look, I've done with the kale, no more kale. I would like a steak.
I believe my recommendation along these lines is perhaps not the opposite, but arugula, not so different.
I could do perhaps the arugula, but meat, I mean, no, I'm afraid not. I swore an oath in New Zealand when I was on walkabout never again to eat meat after I saw a kid lamb die in my girlfriend's arms.
So I believe
she was trying to resuscitate it after it had been unfortunately birthed on the hillside near our camp.
There are a number of alternative foods. You know, unfortunately, we are nearing the end of our time, but I think that we might be able to discuss the reasoning behind the worry about life. I think it's ironic that you are almost our last caller, compared to the previous caller who wanted us to end another life. That you have such an exaggerated concern for other life that you will not even nurture your own
with it.
But have you considered legumes?
Perhaps, but only if they had some sort of... They're so dry, honestly. The kale is... I mean, now...
Or
between,
perhaps some
Perhaps
corn?
I could, but my garden is empty now.
I believe you may...
I've exhausted everything except vinyl. I have nothing to eat here, but...
I believe what
records.
The problem is that your connection to the central consciousness is so very strong, stronger than even ours, really, that you are even losing focus on your own being, which is a very dangerous path to follow.
Yes, it is important to remain at least a little bit grounded.
I'm intensely flattered by that last statement. I will certainly consider it and meditate on it a long time, subsuming and digesting it until it becomes the humility
perhaps
from which
lentils.
I will gather greater wisdom.
Perhaps lentils are what is in order. for your situation.
Another option.
I will do as you advise. I will look into rentals as soon as I'm able to sell some of my records to buy some.
Excellent caller, and we wish you indeed the greatest success with your nutritional endeavors.
Thank you. Peace be upon you.
Masalam, and thank you for listening. Professor Levine, also thank you so much for reaching out to us from distant Chile.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I had a wonderful time, and I am off to climb a mountain now.
Excellent, and I hope sincerely that we are able to commune in the future.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will.
Thanks also to Erno.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. It was a wonderful show today, Doctor.
And thanks also to Zorro.
I think all of you, everyone.
I am Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. Thank you to our many callers and to the callers that we could not reach. Our sincerest apologies. Stay tuned here on WMBR Cambridge for Hipster Happy Hour. Ma'asalama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.